So I would say also, like, have your network and your mentors, and like, you are one of mine, who you say, is this how you would do wholesale? Is that what you did? Is this why sales works this way? And the people who have been in the industry are your guides and your mentors, and that having that network's incredibly important.
Hi, team, and welcome to the CEO Podcast. This is a place where we will have conversations on culture and team chemistry. We will deconstruct why there actually is an I in team from the strategies and attributes of the highest impact people and teams out there, so that in turn, you can apply as tools in your life, business, and sports. My name and your host is Kevin Rutherford. I'm a CEO and leader by trade and training. I've directed teams to successful acquisition and exit, while also creating recognized cultures where people want to work and play. So let's jump right into today's episode.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of the Chief Eternal Optimist Podcast. And I've got an optimist, I think, in Lauren Phillips over here with me and our guest. So really, really stoked to chat with you, Lauren, today and really get some insights that are happening in your career, because you've had a lot. Mm-hmm. But before we get started, we are here at the running event. Can you hear the buzz? Do you feel the buzz?
I feel the energy for sure.
I feel the energy.
Yeah.
So we're at the running event. I went for a run this morning at 7 a.m.
Oh, don't even bring that up. Now I feel so runner's guilt now. Runner's guilt.
You didn't run?
I didn't run.
Tell me more, Lauren.
Because I didn't have my children. I kind of felt like I would be a little wild and sleep in till 7. And I stayed in my bed. I did.
Okay. Did you run yesterday?
I did run yesterday. And now I'm like, okay, definitely run tomorrow.
And guess what? I didn't run yesterday.
Okay.
See?
We're balancing it out.
We're totally balancing it out. I'm excited to dig in here with you and learn a little bit about you as a human. And you've worked at some really amazing places. But before we go there, I want to actually go before that and think earlier life.
Okay.
Pre-work. You've been in this sports mindset for a long time. What was your sport of choice as you were a kid, teenager?
So definitely soccer. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, in all the travel teams, traveled around the U.S. It was my life. Indoor, outdoor soccer. I think I created or committed the original sin of being a mainer and not knowing how to ski till I was 20 because I was always playing soccer. So in the team atmosphere my whole life. And then actually, you know, played in college and then actually broke my leg in half.
Wait. You broke your leg in half?
Yes.
On the field?
On the field, on a breakaway. Goalie came out, flattened me, and broke my leg in half, so couldn't play my senior year. And in my recovery, the physio said to me, okay, so you can't jump or go side to side, so all you can do is run straight right now for a long time. And so in my head, being the type A I am, I was like, well, what can I do if I can run straight for a long time? I think I'll run a marathon. I think my senior year of college, I will run the Boston Marathon. And then I got more into running. And now running, I would say, for sure, is my sport and has been for the last 20 years, 15 years.
You are, I can attest to this. I know you're a really good runner because do you remember doing a 10K together?
Yes.
In Vancouver?
Yes, and it was pouring rain.
It was pouring rain. It was nasty out.
Yes.
And what you don't... you don't know is I was doing everything I could to just hang with you for as long as I could. And I think I stayed with you for about 3-4 miles. I don't even know.
It
was not all of it, though.
Okay.
And then away you went. And I'm like, just go.
I remember seeing the pictures from the race and we both had very serious faces.
Oh, yeah.
I think neither one of us was going to drop and be like, I can't hang. I can't do it.
I tried to hang. I tried and I didn't.
Do you also remember the time we ran together and I was pregnant? And you and Kelly were the first ones who knew. And I was doing that run through the Run Lululemon Run Summit that I had invited you
to.
And there's a photo. And I remember no one else knew except for you that I was pregnant on the run. And I think some people were like, what happened to this girl? She's like slowing down over here. And I think you were the one that's like, are you good? Are you okay?
Yes, I do remember that.
I remember that run very vividly.
Yeah. I'm curious about Do you, like, if you think of your perception of team chemistry, soccer versus marathon and running, or is there a team chemistry at all when it comes to running? Like, what do you see the differences there? And I'm just trying to think of, like, through the power of people and energy. Mm. Like, what's your perspective?
I think it's interesting because playing soccer my whole life, being around, you know, 18 to 25 women that you needed to make it work with, and I was captain of my collegiate soccer team, and you can't really get away. You know, you have to show up every day, every practice, multiple times to be present, and there's an element of making it work because of the team chemistry. Because if your team's disjointed, not connected, fighting, and then you show up on the field, you're going to lose. That is like an automatic. And you can see the teams who have just all stars, you know, like they don't win. It's the people who have the chemistry, have the connection. They're going to have each other's back. If I'm running forward, who's going to cover me? With running, well, there is like components to team. I feel like you can get away and you can kind of be your own star and it doesn't really hurt anyone else.
Yep.
Later in life, I ran with clubs. Mm-hmm. And so I think when you're running on a track, which interesting is like if it's a track workout and the coach says you run your 5K pace, one person goes out and they're not running the 5K pace and you're looking around being like, that's not your 5K pace. But then you kind of go and then they can also throw it off. But it's like they only throw off the workout, not like the end game,
right. Yep.
Which I feel like with soccer, the practice, the game, it's about the chemistry and that has to be there or you're not going to win. It's not, you're going to be successful.
Can we talk about being the team captain for a second? And the captain has a really interesting role for those out there that haven't played team sports. You know, you're not the coach, you don't have authority, yet you've got a role as a captain. And what did you see your role and how did that manifest itself? Like, whether you, if you look back and gave yourself advice of like, I thought I did this really well, I didn't do this very well. If I could go back in time, I would do it. Well, like, what would that be?
I think what my advice would be going back, I tend to be a bit, I think it's the New England side of me, a bit hard and a bit, I'm going to do this. I expect everyone to give every 100%. There isn't like a ton of empathy. I would see people better. I think I would see my teammates better. What are they struggling with? What are their individual needs? The ones who aren't showing up, why? What could I be doing differently to help them? Versus, this is the speed. This is get on board or get off. You know, yeah. I think I was a bit of a dictator when it came to that. And I look back and I'm like, oh, okay, that's why sometimes the more strong dictator, you know, get on board or not, that doesn't work as well.
Did the team react? I guess maybe said differently, the team's reaction to you, my guess is as that leader, dictator, kind of self-professed.
Might be extreme.
Yeah. Was it positive or negative, like from your teammates?
I think it was probably a mix because I think for some people, that leadership style works.
It.
And for me, personally, it works for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest learning is I can't speak to them how it works for me. I need to speak to them how it works for them. And so the people who that worked for their, you know, it motivated them, great. But then the ones that it more, they didn't respond to it, it wasn't their type leadership, I think that was harder for them. And I think in business and leading business teams, that's been my biggest learning of, okay, I have a team of 8 women.
Yep.
I need to learn how to motivate and inspire and engage each of them, which is all different. And it's not my love language. It's theirs. And I need to know what that is because it's not one size fits all. And it's certainly not speak to them how they want. You know, you have to learn.
Yeah.
And
that's powerful.
Time.
That's really powerful. Okay. So let's kind of think about this one. There's a book out recently, and it's actually focused on kids, but I think it applies to all humans. Mm-hmm. And it's about mattering, feeling noticed, as you just talked about, meeting people where they are. And I'm thinking about team chemistry. And if you think about the type of teammates you want now in your business world, would you rather, maybe it's an if and an and, but would you rather have individual sport athletes or team sport athletes, or maybe no athlete at all?
That's a great question. And it's interesting, at Lululemon, where I worked, we talked about pretty quickly, you can see just in general, if someone played sports. So not necessarily team or individual, but you could quickly assess if someone was able to, did you come from a sport background? Did you play your whole life? Because you do notice that difference. Just the level of grind, the level of, I got to make this work. There's other people involved. Just the level sometimes of grit, that I do feel like there is that difference of people coming from sport background and not a level of maybe toughness, I think, at times. I think I realize there are roles that an individual contributor or someone maybe from an individual sport, it's great. And that's important, maybe on more logistics or finance, you know, those type roles. But in general, I would pick team sport just because you have to make it work. The dynamic is so important to the success. And team sport, I think you know that a bit more, because the whole has to work, and the whole only works if the parts and the individual people work.
Totally. Yeah. That, like, I personally tend to agree with you. I think some of the unwritten lessons that we get in team sports, really at any age, but really as I'm thinking specifically thinking as a kid and playing hockey and like you did with soccer, and you learn how to lose as well, not just how to win.
Yes.
And that means there's trying times. What do you do with that? I just think it's incredibly powerful later in life, because you're going to have some teammates that aren't performing where you want them to. So what do you do? Well, when you're working in sports, you go, well, I've got to find a way to meet them where they are, help encourage them, get them to grow, help them be accountable to each other. I'm with you. I personally think the team sport element's there. Now, granted, there's a lot of grit when I think of, you know, you doing marathons. The race starts at what, like mile 19 or 20?
Definitely.
Right?
Yes.
I've also crashed and burned after mile 20.
I think I remember seeing you on Heartbreak Hill of mile 21, and you specifically said, do you want me to help you run? And I was like, no, Kevin. I've been there.
Yeah. There's tough times.
There is.
But we got through it.
We did.
Can we talk about, of the companies that you worked at, what are some, actually, let's start with this, the identities of the culture. If you were to describe the identity of the culture of the different companies you've worked at, how would you describe them?
Oh, so I think Reebok was the first company I worked at right out of college, and was there for almost 4 years. And that was fun and engaging and a bit top-down leadership, but I was the lowest on the totem pole. So it almost felt like anything anyone gave me, anyone who would work with me, give me an assignment. I got to present in front of Herbert Heiner, who was the CEO of Adidas at the time. Everything was just so learning, and I was just, you know, ferociously taking it all in. There was a lot of people my age who was very energetic. It was a fun time. It was a fun environment. And I think I felt that from my bosses as well. They were having fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think Reebok had money. So we got to do a lot of fun events. I traveled to Asia my first time there. So there was experience and fun.
Where in Asia did you go?
Where did I go my first time? I want to say it was maybe Guangzhou.
Okay.
I've been all over.
What a culture shock, probably, at the time, right?
Yes. And I remember I had to take a car by myself from the airport, and my whole family was like, oh my gosh, we're so nervous for you. You know, it's just the little main girl going overseas. But it was an amazing experience. And I, from that point on, was like, I need to travel more. I need to expose myself more.
The gentleman you described from Reebok was the founder, right? Is that?
I presented in front of the founder of Adidas, who Adidas owned Reebok at the time.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yes. I blended the two worlds. By the way, I heard an interview with the founder of Reebok on a podcast just in the last week. And it was like amazing. It was an amazing interview. Like he was very charismatic and had a ton of thoughts on brand and culture.
Yeah,
but
and
anyway,
been through a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be interesting to see where they go next.
Agree. Okay. Yeah. So here we are. Adidas, Reebok.
Yeah. I'll skip over Under Armour's identity, because that was...
How long were you there?
Only a year.
Okay.
So I usually don't even talk about that blip in, you know, my career, because it was just toxic male energy.
Did you live in Baltimore?
I did, which was very intense as well.
Yeah, and it can be. Yeah.
A culture shock for me also.
Yeah.
And quickly realizing that culture was not where I wanted to be. I didn't see women very valued there, and I felt I felt somewhat objectified, you know, and that's not where I wanted to spend my time. And especially in a pivotal age as like 20, I think I was 25.
Yeah.
I knew this is not for me quickly. So,
Well, good for you on knowing what works for you or what doesn't. And I'm sure many people and women in particular can quickly see that, but then to actually make the move and say, in that earlier, like, you're probably thinking I'm killing my career and you're like, you're questioning everything, but I got to go. I just have to have the courage to move.
Yes. That's, and I think that's
great.
That was very hard because I think there's a point where you're like, 1 year, that's not enough. But I think I really trust my gut and I've made some pretty bold moves in my life. And I knew this one was going to have potentially some consequences, but the bigger not staying true to myself, this authentically, I could not align with this brand and the way I was being treated. So it was hard, but made a great move and it was the best decision.
Before we jump from the one that you typically skip on Under Armour, I just want to dig in a little bit here because I'm sure the culture at Under Armour has evolved a lot in this time period. I hope it has based on what you're describing. But there is a learning here that maybe both you and I can learn from, as well as anyone else out there. What are signals that if you look back, going, I never would have gone into something that didn't fit me, at that early stage or even before you went in. Were there signals? And what should we watch for? What would that be?
So a little quick backstory. I went to Under Armour because I do believe in people, following people. Your leadership especially is do you believe the leader and where they're going? Mm-hmm. And my former boss at Reebok went to Under Armour. Called me and said, do you want to, come with us? We're building the whole women's division.
Yes.
And I was like, well, I am down for her. Her leadership is incredible.
Yes.
At the age of 25, Reebok pushed my non-compete. I sat out of work for a year at that age, at that coordinator level, waiting to get to Under Armour. In that time, my boss, who I was going to work for, left Under Armour. So I walked into a bee's nest of this woman. She left. So I felt like there was this, tremendous pressure on me to, she's not there. I don't have the leader. So, I think the red flags would have been looking and been like, could I have gotten out of this, know, before just taking the leap. And I think there is a part of you, and especially women, it's like, oh, I committed to this. This is what I'm doing. I can't let anyone down.
Yeah.
But I think I've learned pausing and thinking, is this best for me?
Yep.
Is this really what I want to be doing? I've waited a year to come to this company, but maybe this is wrong. Maybe that was a sign. Maybe, that was God saying, this is not right for you.
Right.
There are all these pauses. Listen to these pauses.
Yeah.
In any other circumstance, I think doing your due diligence with networking around, hey, do you know people who work there? How do they like it? What do they think of the culture? Even messaging people on LinkedIn. Hey, I'm looking at this company, you might know this person. How do you think about it?
Yep.
Because culture now, so, so important, and leadership. And I wouldn't go anywhere where I didn't know and have more insights.
I think that's fair. And I think it's a good lesson learned for any one of us. By the way, on culture and identity of the culture, I think the example that we're using is hopefully, in today's world, extreme still exists, to be clear. I'm not blind, but in general, I'm just thinking cultures aren't necessarily the right fit for everybody.
Correct. Right.
Again, that's not right for anybody in my mind, so I'll just put that out there. But so I think doing your due diligence and trying to understand is like, what does it mean to be on this team? What does it take to be on this team? And does that match my energy and my identity? And I think, like, for Noon, I always thought of at Noon, this culture I hoped could be for everybody, but it's not necessarily for everybody.
Right. Not one size fits all.
And that's okay.
Yes.
And that's okay. And so if you opt out of the culture because it wasn't a fit for you, I applaud you. And I think that's really smart. So I just think, again, in the spirit of knowing who you are as a person and also knowing who you are as a team, as a team identity culture, I think is really important because it also says what you don't want to be.
right?
What you don't want to do.
Definitely.
Anyway, that was really courageous. I love that. I love that story of you making the move, of having the courage to do that. Let's go on to the next part of your career.
Well, I worked at L.L. Bean next, and that was, it almost felt like a healing after Under Armour. Very kind people, a very set way of doing things. It was not the high stress, high pressure. You know, you're in front of everyone. You are visually, the representation of the company. I wasn't on stage presenting to 200 people. So it felt, for that time, comfortable, really nice. It's exactly what you would think of L.L. Bean. I learned a ton because I went into buying. So I learned retail math, and I learned this whole other area that I was nervous about learning. But just great people.
Yep.
I'm a Mainer, so I'm obviously going to pad this a little bit too, because it's a Maine company.
Are they in Portland?
They're in Freeport. Just a little bit north.
Okay.
And it was wonderful and great people. And I cannot say enough about their leadership team. Just solid humans.
Yeah.
And they all treated each other that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on the younger side there of the people there. And, there was a lot of just great people who took to teaching me, and I learned a lot.
Yep.
After that was Lululemon, and that was there for 5 years. And that was the pinnacle of my career. Mm. It was, I was at Lululemon the time when they were still, they still are, but they were growing, they were cool, they were the place you wanted to work at, my dream company. And it was a lot of change. We would reorg every 6 months. It was a lot of women. And that was all new to me too, but I felt like I walked in there and I felt like I was at home. I felt like almost like I was back at my college soccer team, because every woman around me was so inspiring and so multidimensional and really cool. And I was like, oh, I'm not that cool. Like, these people are all cooler, smarter. You speak two languages. You're from this company. You have a side hustle. It was just really inspiring. And I felt like it made me work harder, made me want to be better. I traveled the world with them. I got to do and see things that I'm just super grateful for.
Yeah.
And the culture changed, over time.
Was there three different CEOs over your tenure? Is that right?
I had just two.
Two. Okay.
I had Laurent and
Calvin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, it was a wonderful place, but I think you did see the push of, growth and, what they, where they needed to be from an investment standpoint and how they needed to get to X dollar growth and what that meant. And we used to call it kind of like the changing of the guards, like the old school Lulu people and the new Lululemon people. And I was right there when that shift was happening.
Yeah.
And you felt this tension because there was new way of thinking, new ways of the team operating. And then there was the people who truly started the brand and the company saying, no, this is how we always did it.
Yep.
And I was kind of in that middle and being like, I want to hold on to the past, but knowing we needed to grow.
Yeah.
So it was a tough part because I felt I was in this beautiful, magical place. And it's like, don't take that away. I don't want to change, but change is inevitable.
That I'm really interested in this inflection point that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Noon was acquired by Nestle Health Science, and that inflection point was really rocky for the team that was with me. And then I stayed on through the transition, but it was rocky because it's so different. And so you're coming in at that transition stage, like you talked about. Do you have any advice if you could go back and say, gosh, Lulu, you did this so well on that transition, and here's what I would suggest if you could do it all over again, what you'd do differently? Because everything I've heard about the Lululemon team culture and brand, for that matter, is really powerful, even to this day.
Definitely.
But I will say the OGs, they're obsessed with what it was. And I kind of love to hear that.
Yes.
Anyway, so what's your thought? Like that's a really rocky transition, can be. And it sounds like maybe rocky is too strong, but there was something there.
Yeah, I think it's hard because I see the need for change. We have to continue to evolve and grow as humans, as brands. Mm-hmm. And we can't do the same thing and think we're going to keep making the same amount of money and the consumer is still going to want to buy the same prints, bold. You know, we have to evolve with trends. So I get that. And I think that I wish there had been more respect for, as we say, the OG people who truly paved the path and created the culture and truly were some of the most talented designers to this day that I have ever worked with.
Oh, wow.
And I can name mm-hmm. them off the top of my head. And there is no one I know better than those women. I wish there had been a little more respect for what they had done and maybe found a different role for them, but still within the company, or given them a bit more respect when maybe it was time to move on.
Yep.
You know, I think when there is a change, you know, like let's say someone comes from Levi's, they're going to bring all their people that they formerly worked with. And mm-hmm. then there is that big wave of shifting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it does make people feel a bit pushed out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's too bad. And I think that's a hard one also for the leadership to manage. So I see all the sides of it.
Yeah.
I just wish there was a little more for the women who really built the brand and brought in the Wonder Under, created the Speed Short, created the franchise, the culture, and really put Lululemon on the map.
It's such a great brand and story. And then even as great, and it's continued to flourish. Actually, it's like if you're following the metrics economically and what's happening in the stock market with Lululemon, they continue to crush their goals. So a lot's working, clearly. But I just keep thinking, does it have to be this way? Do you ever get this sense that... So this is not picking on Nestle, to be clear. But I've been through little companies, part of bigger companies in several situations. Kashi, Kellogg, Mrs. Meyer's Clean Day, SC Johnson, mm-hmm. Noon, Nestle. And other examples I've observed with leadership. And there's almost like this sense of... And by the way, when I was on the other side of the table and I was in a big company, I think I'm actually maybe channeling my inner self. There's a bit of an ego. So I'm channeling my inner self for big company people out there. Like, oh, that's really cute.
Yeah.
Those little OGs from the company. Let me show you how it's really done.
Yes.
Because look at our experience.
Right.
Did I hurt my shoulder when I patted my back?
Yes.
Did you sense that?
Yes, definitely. Or, you know, if people came from more of a fashion brand,
yeah,
you definitely felt that like, oh, I've done this before. Let me show you.
Yeah.
And I think at Saish, we have deeply felt that, oh, I've been at Nike or, oh, I've been here. And, you know, I think where we always come back to is like, yeah, but you never worked here before. You never did what we've done
yep.
here at this brand.
Yeah.
And that's really different. And I think the biggest thing I've learned in different companies is all companies are very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
All you could say I'm a merchant
mm-hmm.
and at 10 different companies, that equals 10 different, very different
things.
Oh,
wow. Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. you might have massive responsibility. You might have a small one lane. You do a similar thing every day.
Yeah.
Or, so it's just we can't compare ourselves. And I think a lot of people think because they have a Nike or a Burberry or whatever on their resume, that gives them superiority. And it doesn't, because sometimes the smaller, scrappier brands, they've actually done way more work and built more processes or worn more hats or, you know, all the different things.
I'm so obsessed with this because acquisitions happen all the time or change in leadership happens all the time. And I'm trying to think through if I have any advice for the bigger companies as or change in leadership and what to do. And maybe you have a thought here, because I actually get the sense that these folks that are coming from, let's say, the new group, the new future, they want to absorb the OGs and what they've got and get that ethos. They really want it. Like, even though I kind of did a little comment of it's that's cute, but at the same time, I actually think they want it, but they don't really understand it. And so you kind of look at it as like the zoo animals behind the glass. Like, that's really cool, but that's not necessarily us. How do we help future leader changes understand that and apply it in the new way? So it's a meaning, how do we not lose it? And that's, I think, part of the challenge. Although, granted, I think Lulu's doing a really nice job.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's different, but mm-hmm. they're doing a nice job. Do you have any advice there? Because I am constantly thinking about this and I'm trying to articulate to help the Nestle's, the SC Johnson's, mm-hmm. the Kellogg's of the world. But it's hard because it's an art and science.
Right. It is. I think that's a perfect way of saying the art and science of it.
Mm.
Because I think there is this element of understanding why people love the brand they're at. Why, you know, those Lululemon OGs, what do you love about it? Mm-hmm. And trying to keep as much of that real and alive while you're bringing in your expertise as the big brand, you know, but getting to know what worked and why, mm-hmm. and what did they think should change? And like having that human connection. I remember when Calvin came in as the CEO of Lululemon, he had multiple groups in his office meeting him. And, you know, at that point, 28 years old, I think I was a merch manager. And I sat in his office, him as the CEO of Lululemon. There were six other of us. There was a man from, you know, logistics. There was someone from supply. And he just talked with all of us.
Yep.
And I thought, how human.
Mm.
How normal, and like you're learning about what we like and what's worked in the company to then sit back, assess, learn, and then say like, okay, what are the areas I probably shouldn't touch because that's really sacred? And then where can I lean in? And we all gotta, you know, we might not like it, but we need to make some changes.
Yeah.
And that just felt, I have never seen a leader do that.
Yeah.
And that
yeah.
was really pretty magical for me to see that with him.
He's really strong leader. He's been a strong leader. I've known Calvin, fortunately for me, We knew each other. We started our career actually together at Loblaws in Canada, largest retailer. And Calvin progressed through the organization at a rapid pace because he was just so good, so good with people.
Yeah.
I like to say, and I'm boring from somewhere, but strategy is actually 5%. Then you have 95% of the way to go.
Yeah.
And so that 95% is, I think he's really good at that. And I'm sure he's great at the 5% too, to be clear. And then, yeah, you think about his experience over time. Sephora was before, right? Lulu.
Right.
And yeah, smart on him.
Yeah.
Really smart.
And whether how much he actually took in, it made people feel seen. And I think it's something we talk about a lot at Sage. You felt seen.
I would say if I could say my perspective, knowing what he did, I've done similar things. I think my guess is he does care.
Right.
However, he has a hypothesis as to what he wants to do.
Right.
And so he's hearing this and he's probably either in his mind, I'm proving or disproving the hypothesis, mm-hmm. which is still, you're being heard and seen.
Yeah.
It's like, I hear you, I see you, and now does this help my hypothesis or not? And then adjust accordingly.
Right.
That's my guess is what he was doing. So I do think he heard. He may not have done everything there, but I think that's my guess.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go on the next leg of your career journey and the marathon that you're in of life.
Uh-huh.
New Balance.
Yeah. New Balance reminded me a lot in culture of L.L. Bean. So established company. They knew what they were doing. They had a lot of processes. I was coming in to work on collaborations, which was a newer part of their business. But very, like, you knew where you stood. It was hierarchical, in same as L.L. Bean, where it's like, this is the leader. This mm-hmm. is who falls under them. This is who sits there. You don't skip a step. It takes time to work yourself up.
Yeah.
And it was easy because you kind of got in line with it, and you either followed suit. And I think that's why at L.L. Bean and New Balance, you have people who have been there 20, 30, 40 years because you knew what you were getting.
Yep.
And it's not that it was easier, but the processes had been set. You know, Lululemon, we were still working in Excel. We were building the way that the future company would work.
Yeah.
And it was grind and long hours. And, you know, it was really exciting. And we were burning it on all ends. Mm-hmm. New Balance was not that.
Yeah,
it was, things were set up for you. So you had a job, you kind of fit into that slot and do your job, and you're well respected, and respect was given, you know, by working, and then you would work your way up. And so for me, it was a change from Lululemon. I didn't have as much excitement around it, but it was very respectful. Hmm. And like, I have the utmost respect for Chris and Jim and how they built the organization.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was kind of
was there a gritty, like, Boston kind of like attitude with it? Because it doesn't sound like that.
No.
And that's not what I was expecting.
No.
I was like expecting the grit of Boston, which, by the way, I love Boston.
I do too. I had my son in Boston, run the Boston Marathon. I love it too.
Yep.
No, I didn't feel that. And maybe because I was this, we always joked, like, I was in apparel at New Balance and did a little bit with footwear on the collabs, but we were the stepchild. We weren't the footwear. So
maybe
on the footwear teams, it was a bit more mm-hmm. because they, you know, they were the one really bringing in the money. But no, I didn't feel that way. I felt like it was all, and you know, I was a parent then. There was a lot of parents around me. So it was, you know, come in at between 8 and 9, leave at 4, go pick up your kid. I generally didn't have to work late nights. I generally didn't have to work weekends because the teams were well staffed too, because there was that the money to be able to support the teams.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I've had that before other than at L.L. Bean, where it was like a full team. You had your job. You felt support. You had a boss above you. You had someone below you. You know, like you had support around you. So if you did take a vacation, there were people there to cover you. There was proper maternity leaves. Like there was all those things that at Lulu, it was like, oh no, you can't work. I never have not worked on like a Thanksgiving week because it's Black Friday, Cyber Monday. Lulu, you would travel to the stores during that time because obviously in Canada, you didn't have American Thanksgiving. So
we're not going to acknowledge that.
Right.
That fake second Thanksgiving that happens every year.
Of course. So, but yeah, I look back on that as like a time where it was, again, learning and learning a different culture, but not the same grind as, you know, the Lululemon or the Under Armour of the world.
What does it take to be on the team at New Balance if you were to describe, like, this is who we are, this is what it takes? Like, kind of a brief thought on that identity. I'm just trying to pull that one out. I'm trying to understand this one because it was unexpected.
It feels
in a good way.
Respect. I think that's, you know, and I think it's also, there feels a bit of a New England thing of like respect.
Mm.
You respect who's been above you. You respect who's been at the company longer.
Okay.
You respect someone who's your senior.
Yeah.
And you follow their lead and you get in line and that's how it goes. And you put in your time to get the promotion. And so I think there's a part of me that's, I was raised that way. I think there's a part of team sports that's a bit like that I could get in line. I get this. Okay, this is how this works. This is the culture. I can get this. I can get in line.
A lot of times cultures will battle. The battle and tension can happen around the rules. Like, I don't want that. I don't want that. And to your point, there's a positive to, if you know the rules, get in line with the rules. The question is, where do you raise your standards? Like, that's the conversation where I try to shift people. It's like, no one wants to enforce rules. Like, let's be clear. No leader's like, I want to, like, slap you on the wrist for that. No one wants to do that. So let's just get in line with the rules and then influence if you want change and then kind of focus on the standards. So I love where you're going. Is there, in this journey of yours, is there any cultures that you look outside where you've worked and you think, because we'll get to the last stop here in a second, that you admire and you go, gosh, this culture of this company and this team, damn, I want more of that. And I'm not saying you're trying to pitch yourself for a gig or anything, but yeah, is there any like thoughts on cultures of teams and you're like, that one?
I mean, my immediate obvious answer is Noon, and I'm not saying this, but it is true. I think when you meet people at other companies and they are happy, and they like what they do. Yeah. When you meet people who have been there for, you know, especially at my age, when they've been there for 5-10 years, that's not a normal thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, something's working there.
Sure.
There's something that, and I think a lot of people that have worked with you and at Noon, when I would work with them, it's like they were happy, nice, energetic people.
Yep.
And I think that to me is like a sign of health in a company and an organization. I look now, you know, and I've said this to Wes, my boss, my dream other company is like a Bobby of the world. So the women's led infant formula company who is truly changing the industry, changing the game. They're, you know, at Congress fighting for rights of mothers, you know, like childcare protection. And I think now I'm in this phase of my career where, yes, good leaders, good culture, but I think, you know, do you support women? Do you support mothers? Are you going to be a culture that understands that mothers do have to multitask? Are you going to be a culture that understands people have different needs? Like, I don't know if I know any now other than just what I've seen from them.
Yep.
But I will say sometimes, just like Instagram, what you see on the outside isn't necessarily the inside.
True.
So unless you're in it, I don't know if you can necessarily tell other than just talking to the employees. So
I think that's fair. And by the way, and thank you for the compliment to the team and the culture at Noon, because I think what you see is what you get. Granted, we're not going to air out like all of our dirty laundry, if you will. And we always had challenges and issues like any other team, but that's because culture is alive. I think it was a special place. And I think to your point, hopefully they felt like they're treated well. And I think in addition to that is that team chemistry, that vibe is that you feed off of it. That can actually go downward as well. As an example, I just have no tolerance for gossiping. So when I hear a rumor and then I'm doing a town hall with the team, I would go, all right, here's the rumor. Literally call out the rumor. Let me tell you what's really going on here. The reason I would do that, and I would never single out a person. I don't believe in that. If you're going to talk to someone, you have an issue with an individual, you do it not in front of a group. But the rumor is now spread. So it doesn't matter who said or what. So it's like, let's talk about it. And what it does is it starts to build this transparency on legitimate things that need to be talked about, and it builds trust. So I love that you saw that. The Bobby one, it could be great. By the way, I think if you have a really strong mission-based company and you're connecting with it, that is a rallying cry for us to all get around. And I personally, I'm not familiar with Bobby to any depth, but I can appreciate everything that you're saying. And I go, I bet you it's, I don't know, but my guess is it's very similar to what you would expect. Because the mission's so clear. Like Patagonia.
Are you in on that mission? Yes.
And by the way, it may not be for everyone, which is kind of crazy. Women's rights. But by the way, I'm digressing here again, but I heard this recently. This is going to be, you're going to go, duh. I'm going to be the dude here going, what? I didn't even think of it this way. And it was all about, is the office culture or the workforce in the office culture broken? So I listened to this podcast, and one of the things they talked about was women in the workforce. And I'm not going to lie, I didn't think of it this way. Again, you're going to go, duh. And it's like the offices were built with, really with men in mind more so. Meaning that 8 to 5, 9 to 5, 9 to 6, whatever the, like the time away from home didn't incorporate the multitasking of being a mom. And moms tend to, not always, to be clear with everyone, tend to take on more of the responsibility of, I got my job, my what I'm doing for my career journey. And so it's a yes, and I've got to take care of the kids and be ready and have the schedule and all these things. And office culture, I thought it was really fascinating. Is it broken? I'm like, how is it broken? And that's why I wanted to listen to this. And it went there and I go, yeah, that's a good point. Like, and I don't, Kelly and I don't have human kids. So maybe I didn't appreciate it from that until I heard it. I have always been sensitive to it, but I didn't really internalize the framework of an office didn't necessarily suit it. So anyway, for whatever it's worth,
I definitely feel that. I felt that ever since I had kids, for sure.
I believe it. I believe it. Are your kids playing sports?
So my son isn't really old enough yet. He's three. So he'll get into it.
He's a bundle of energy.
He has a lot of energy. He is a fiery little one. My daughter is a sweet, more gentle. I don't know where she came from. She'll play soccer and she plays sports and she just has fun. I've been really strategic to not push them into a lot of things right now. They're young. There'll be a time for it. And I just want them to have fun right now. And on the weekends, lay around in their pajamas and play games and have fun. So we'll get there.
All good. They're adorable. I've met them both. Many times, as you know. So let's talk about the last step. Where are you now? Why is this business important? Like, what is the mission? What are you and the team, small crew, small but mighty, trying to achieve?
So at Saish now, and I've been here for over 2.5 years, and I couldn't have dreamed of Saish. I didn't know a company like this could have existed. And I had actually left New Balance thinking I was going to start my own maternity apparel line. And thank goodness I did not do that. Now going through startup and seeing how just the hustle, the grind, the unknowns, it's scary. And I'm glad I didn't take that on myself. So I heard what Wes and Allison were building, and another colleague from formerly New Balance also knew Wes. We kind of got on the phone with him and heard what they were doing. And it just was this overwhelming sense of this is my dream. Like working for Allison Felix, working for a mission-led company, working for a company that was going to see women and was out there to say women deserve better. My son was a year old, and I was really in the struggle of what is worth my time if I'm not with them. Yeah. I've worked in corporate environments. I had my first daughter. I had the beautiful maternity leave for a year in Canada with my son. It was 3 months. It was the pandemic. I was multitasking, being on calls, breastfeeding, doing all the things. And it just got to me like, what am I doing? If this isn't really lighting me up, or I'm not making truly like somewhat of a difference in the world, I don't want to be away from my babies. Like, I don't want to be a stay-at-home mom, but like, it has to be worth it. And so when I heard about Saish, I was like, this is worth it.
Oh, wow.
And started with them right when the company started. And it's been an amazing, wild ride. But I truly feel we are changing the footwear industry.
How are you changing the footwear industry?
I think we are making people see that women need to be seen as separate than men. We are not small men. And I think for so long, this industry has not say gotten away with treating women as second tier and just not meeting their needs, not recognizing they have different bodies, different needs, different shapes. You know, it was just here's what's for men and then we'll put it in a different color. And I think how much Allison has fought for women and mothers. Mm-hmm. It's just so authentic to her and her brand to then say, okay, yeah, this is footwear, but it's just the start. This is just the start. And it's honestly the conversation that I hope our retailers get to have with their staff. I hope it's the conversation that today at TRE, people can say, wait, what? Shoes are made off a mold of a man's foot. That's how it's been forever. Mm-hmm. What about women? Like, I hope that can then, you know, go into boardrooms and go into other companies. And then I think, you know, you've done all this work at Noon around women's nutrition and how women's bodies take on different minerals and chemicals differently.
That's right.
We need to, that needs to expand. And I think at TRE, we have run brands, but then we also have wellness brands here. There's apparel brands, there's, you know, different camelbacks. Like, and I think, I hope it gets everyone talking and realizing women need better.
You know, it seems so obvious that we should have been doing this long ago. So that's one. Two, I think about women account for something like 80% of all purchases. And what I mean by that, if you were to break that down, is I'm not saying women buy everything, but they influence a lot of purchases that we guys make as well.
Right.
And so it's actually really good business if you want to think of, are we meeting women's needs uniquely to them? And it's nuts that we haven't got there till now.
Right.
Thankfully, thankfully is probably the wrong terminology or word. But today there are more women running and finishing marathons than men.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's really close on the full. Then as you go to a half and a 10K, I think the gap's even bigger.
Wow, okay.
And so the demand is there. Therefore, I think it's getting people's attention.
Yeah.
Now, that's not Saish in terms of how all of you started, right?
Right.
With you and Allison and Wes. But I think it's really fascinating that action's now being taken because we're now seeing the demand. It's in your face.
Right.
So I guess my takeaway is this. Do right by women in this case. And guess what? Your business will follow.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's not just, do right by women just for the cause. There also is the financial benefit to it.
It's massive.
Yeah. But I think it's not just, it's an unknown mission and who knows how it'll go.
Yeah. So. I think that's not on shoes specifically, but I think Lulu did a nice job of that. Hmm. Right. Yeah. I think. Yeah. Is that fair?
Yeah. I think for us, it was great to see them come out with it because it just gave more, you know, more eyes, more relevance to the conversation.
Yeah.
And that's great. And I know they had been working on that shoe for a long time. So it was great to see.
I'm thinking their shoes. I don't know much about their shoe, to be honest, that they designed recently and targeted women. But I was just thinking about their apparel, what they did there.
Yes.
But shoes wise, well, no one's going to compete with Saish.
No,
come on.
Like, no way.
Come on.
Not even come close.
Come
on. We were the first. Well, right around the first.
Well, you are going to be the most impactful.
Yes. Yes.
And you definitely are leading the charge. And the voices that you have behind this is game changing. So one more thing on Saish, if we could. These early stage companies are exhilarating, exhausting, and scary as heck. Did I summarize that okay?
Yes, I would. That's, I'm like, I cringe a bit. I'm like, yes, yes, yes. It's all of those things.
If you had advice for budding entrepreneurs and those starting out, do you, now that you're in the thick of this earlier stage company, and again, getting traction, doing some wonderful things out there, but someone starting, like you said, I wish I didn't go back. Do you have any advice that those do want to embark on it? I don't necessarily mean shoes, but gosh, there's got to be some real key nuggets that the folks out here can learn from.
Yeah, I would say just be really, really smart with who you go into business with as number one. Who's going to do this with you?
Yep.
Who's going to be all in? And are you all on the same page?
Yep.
What does success look like? Mm. You know, just some big things that I think are really important that people might not have the conversations with early on. And then when you catch fire, things start going, you kind of can't go back. So that's, you know, who you bring on, but then also who you decide to invest with. Who, you know, is there someone who's going to be investing with you? What's their intention? Just having that and taking that time, I would say, at the beginning, which I think is probably really hard to do, but that's going to set your foundation for success.
Yeah.
And then I think what Wes has done an incredible job with, our CEO and founder, is going in eyes wide open that he doesn't know how to do all this, because no one has done this. No one has done what he's done, because no one has built a female-led sneaker company with Allyson Felix. As you know, no one's done that. They might have done versions of that, or, you know, but no one's done exactly this.
Mm-hmm.
So to have that ability to say, I don't know, but here's what I think. I don't know. And here's the person I feel like it will be really strong. But I think when people go in with their, oh, I know how to do this, I've done this before, that sets up for failure. And I think Wes has done an incredible job of, like, here's what I'm incredible and amazing at, which is being Allyson's manager, knowing how to do contracts, knowing how to negotiate, knowing people. And then where he's not, he has an incredible network of women and people to rely on and bounce things off of. I think him and I both are in constant conversation with our mentors in the industry who help us tremendously, and from some quote unquote competitor brands, but they want us to succeed.
Yeah.
So I would say also, like, have your network and your mentors, and, like, you are one of mine, who you say, is this how you would do wholesale? Is that what you did? Is this why sales works this way? And the people who have been in the industry are your guides and your mentors, and that having that network's incredibly important.
So true. Yeah, you nobody wins alone, right?
Right.
In fact, I'll close on that. Is I have a firm belief that life is a team game, and so that team is in life. So think about it on the home front. You know, it's at work, and if you play sports, in sports, and nobody wins alone. There's a book by one of my favorite hockey players of all time with that title, Mark Messier. That's the inspiration. So, I really loved our chat. I can't wait to have another one.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we can find you anywhere, where would we find you? We'll find you. That's a Wedding Crashers line, I think. I'll find you. Where can we find you?
I would say find Saysh first. So by Saysh on Instagram, BYSAYSH. I'm Lauren M. Phillips on Instagram, but my content is mostly kids and Saysh. So if you want some kids mixed in with some Saysh, that's mine.
Feel free.
Yeah, go for it. You'll see some fun kid costumes. I would also say Wes and Allyson have an incredible podcast that our brand also works with, called Mountaintop Conversations, built around kind of Michelle Obama's theme of climbing the mountain, but then turn around and pulling people up with you. It's an incredible podcast. So check that out too.
Awesome. I will do that. And hopefully everyone else checks it out.
Yeah.
And that's a wrap for today.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in for this latest episode of the Chief Eternal Optimist podcast. Thank you.
Okay, team, let's bring it in. Hopefully you take away something today that you're able to reapply to your world. The purpose and intention of this pod is simply to give you the tools to excel both individually and as a team. Let's be crystal clear. Life is a team sport. This applies to the game of life, business, and in sports. I've said this before, there really is an I in team. I was born and raised in Canada, and the French translation for team there is équipe. So yes, literally, there is an I in équipe, and therefore, the meaning of team. It starts with the individual, that's you and me. We flourish with how we manifest our need to be interconnected. All this leading to imagining a future state of the world we want to create. And we will. So that's all for today. Let's go get it. I would love to hear from each and every one of you, or any one of you. So you can find me at, let me know what you're thinking, on Instagram or Twitter, or known, otherwise known as X today, at the handle clean_lantern. That's clean_lantern. Fire away. And one last request, if I may, and if you feel so compelled, please feel free to leave a review on wherever you listen to your podcasts, and feel free to share as well. Thank you.